GiantsGiants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty. Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, Anita Marks and Paul Dottino.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. Anita Marks and Paul Dottino. And of course, as always, you, our fans, Big Blue Nation. Phone lines are open, 201-939-4513 is the phone number. If you want to get in on the show, that's your opportunity to do so with you for the next hour till 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Also, all things social media, you can find us on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. For any questions or comments, we'll monitor Twitter throughout the show, and we will share those throughout. The schedule for today, we're on with you till 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Then head coach Tom Coughlin does address the media at 11 a.m. You can watch that on the MSG Network or right here on Giants.com as well. And then later on this afternoon, players practice around 1:50, 2 o'clock. They're made available to the media. We will talk to the players, their thoughts on the upcoming game against the Green Bay Packers. As this week, the Giants do prepare for them. And yet another quarterback, very suspect quarterback for the Giants to go up against. This will be the fourth game in a row that the Giants will be up against an opposing team that either is missing their field general or their field general is hurt and injured. So all the stars are being aligned properly for the Giants, and the fact that they've won three in a row, getting ready, hopefully, to win four in a row before their schedule really gets real.
Real?
In essence. Yeah, they actually play real quarterbacks. Again, 201-939-4513
That's if you think Tony Romo's
in. 939-4513 is the phone number to get in. Paul Dottino, Anita Marks. Again, the Giants coming off of a 24-20 victory against the Oakland Raiders. Paul, this is you're my first opportunity to really discuss this game. Your thoughts on the game? If you had to give the Giants a grade on their performance, what would it be?
I'd give them probably like a C plus. You know, they played well enough to win. They beat an inferior team. They continued to show incremental progress in a number of areas, but nonetheless, they still had a really bad pick six thrown by Eli Manning, which he was rushed into and never should have thrown the ball. Should have been taking a sack on that play, but instead he tried to force it, and he paid the price for it. Then you also had the fumble by Peyton Hillis on a 3rd and 20 deep in his own territory, which simply cannot happen. And you also had the special teams blunder on the fumbled kickoff by Jarrell Jernigan, which wound up turning into the only touchdown this defense has allowed now in 14 and a half quarters. So, you know, was it really good? No. Was it good enough to win? Yes. Since the Giants only have 3 wins this season, do you have to be somewhat satisfied with that? Yes. But they need to play better. Now, I will tell you this, Anita. They're playing a Packers team that not only has a substandard quarterback, and we can talk all you like about him because I've done a complete film study on every one of the Packers' plays from last weekend against Philadelphia. But they're going to have 3 offensive linemen out of place in Sunday's game. They're going to have a new center. They're going to have a new right guard. They're going to have a new right tackle. And by the way, the new right tackle is Marshall Newhouse, who's a veteran of a few years, who used to be their left tackle some years ago. In the last 2.5 seasons, Mr. Newhouse has allowed 24.5 sacks. Now, Tolzien is going to be playing his 2nd game ever on Sunday against the Giants. And he's behind a battered offensive line with a right tackle that has basically been a sieve. That's not a good recipe if you're the Green Bay Packers.
No, not at all. 201-939-4513 is the phone number to get in on the show. Any questions or comments as the Giants getting ready to take on the Green Bay Packers, as Paul Zatino and myself will be discussing for the next hour. Again, you know, I hate to be a negative Nelly here, but this is the talk that's going on right now. The Giants, in regard to power rankings, range anywhere between 23, 24, 25 in the NFL. And looking at the three wins that they've had against a Vikings team where Josh Freeman was just totally unprepared, against an Eagles team where Michael Vick couldn't even get out of the first quarter, you had Nick Foles, who was dealing with a concussion, so rookie quarterback Barkley started that game. And, of course, the Giants won. And then this game against the Oakland Raiders, Terrell Pryor even came out and said, I'm just not 100%. My knee is not right. So he wasn't able to scramble or be the elusive Terrell Pryor that has been able to win ball games for that offense. So now a fourth game against the Green Bay Packers. So with all, I mean, everything that you've discussed here, this is a below-average quarterback, a third string on a lot of rosters, and he's going to be starting against the Giants, a suspect offensive line now because they're dealing with a ton of injuries. Realistically, as I said, stars aligning properly for the Giants should win this game and should be 4-6 at the end of Week 11. But then look who they go up against. Romo, RG3 two times, Phillip Rivers, Russell Wilson, Matthew Stafford. And in what you've seen, I mean, you can look at this is a positive in that, okay? Because again, you know, you're there's a lot of negative Nellies out there, and they're talking about, well, you know, how good are the Giants, or have they won these games because of the opponents? But I've seen a little bit more swagger develop. I've seen obviously a better atmosphere here around the facility in the locker room. Even though, yes, these teams have been subpar and you know, not putting their best foot forward because of injuries to their quarterbacks, but the wins, three in a row, anticipating four in a row, and what that has done for this team mentally, I think really, hopefully, could lead them into winning really when the schedule gets more difficult.
Here's the
Am I making sense here?
Sure, you are. And what you're basically saying, if I can use an analogy, is that this is a small snowball right now that's rolling down the hill. And if it can pick up steam by the time they face the tougher opponents, maybe the snowball will be big enough that they can do some damage.
Exactly.
But the snowball's not there yet. Okay? Let's make something very clear to you folks. The Giants are doing okay, but they've got to do better. And the only thing that I continue to tell Anita all the time, and, you know, we talk on and off the air all the time, I say, look, the arrow is incrementally pointing upward. It's getting ever so much better each and every week, but it's still not to the point where I can, with any confidence, say that the Giants are going to pull this sucker off. What I can tell you is that the dominoes have lined up in a position to where the Giants have an opportunity to knock them over and do some damage here. But I can't tell you that they're going to. I could just tell you they now have a chance. And after being 0-6, that's pretty cool. I do want to throw one other thing out here, too. You know, Philadelphia and Washington play each other this week, another divisional matchup. And
Right. Obviously
the Giants still have two games left with Washington and have split with Philly. It would be better for the Giants if Washington wins, no question. Philadelphia has 5 losses. Washington has 6. But it's my opinion, after listening to some of the players on Monday in the locker room, that they really believe that if they can get this sucker to 9-7, which is a lofty goal, considering that means they can only lose one more game the rest of the season. But I believe that they believe if they can get it to 9-7, or even maybe 8-8, I think they really believe that's going to be enough, because I think they're much aware of how mediocre this division is. I think they see that they've been given a second and third chance at life in these last couple of weeks. And so they're not so much scoreboard watching as much as they believe that if they get the job done, that they're going to be okay. And that's part of that swagger you're talking about. They're really not thinking about other people helping them. They think they're going to be good enough to get the job done on their own. And I didn't see that a month ago. So I concur.
201-939-4513. Let's head out to our phone lines. We go to Issa, who's calling from East Rutherford. Welcome.
Good morning, guys. How's everything going?
Good morning.
First thing I want to say is, you know, Thanksgiving is coming up, and you know, I'm grateful for the Jerry Reese. All right, I want to say that because this guy has put a team together, you know, and he knew that Andre Brown was going to come back, so he put him on.
Okay, well, I guess either his battery went dead or he dropped his phone down a flight of stairs. In any event, his point about Andre Brown is actually very interesting because Andre fractured his fibula for the second time in his career, and the Giants put him on the temporary IR list, taking a chance that he would, in fact, come back. Now, that was more on the advice of the doctors than it was anybody else. But, lo and behold, he came back, and what did he do? This guy, in his four-plus years in the NFL, has had 105 total carries. He had 30 of them the other day in Sunday's win against the Raiders. What he did is not to be underestimated, considering that he hadn't played in half a season, had only had a couple of practices last week. He'd been running for a little while, but only a couple of practices. I said to Jeff Fiegels, Anita, I had the opportunity, Jeff did have the opportunity to sit with me a little while in the box on Sunday, and I said to him before the fourth quarter, I hope that they don't give Andre Brown too many more touches because, A, I don't know if he's going to be able to stay healthy for another quarter, and B, I don't know if he's going to be able to hold on to the ball. He must be drop-dead exhausted after taking pounding for three quarters. Do you know on the Giants' last possession after Kiwanuka stripped sack with 3.5 minutes to go, Andre Brown carried the ball five straight times for 21 yards and a first down and allowed Eli Manning to take a knee to drain the final few seconds off the clock. That's what a monster Andre Brown was on Sunday.
Yeah, there's no denying that. But and what I find interesting is going into that game, that wasn't necessarily the case.
As I understand it.
Peyton Hillis was supposed to really get the workload, and because he fumbled.
Can't do it.
Right?
Twice in three games. Can't do it. And quite honestly, I wonder how much patience Tom Coughlin's going to have with him now. Problem is, Brandon Jacobs has some fluid on his knee. They don't know when he can or cannot practice, and therefore they don't know what they can count on him in terms of game action. And so, what do you do? Do you go back to Andre Brown this week and say, Andre, give me 25 carries? I don't know about that. Maybe Peyton Hillis gets a couple touches early on in the game again, and you know what? If he puts the ball on the ground again, how much you want to bet his butt stapled to the bench the rest of the day?
Then what do you do? Then you have Michael Cox?
It might be the only thing you can do. Of course, if he comes in the game, the Packers say, Blitz!
201-939-4513 is the phone number. Let's talk about the offensive line, because obviously we're seeing the rushing attack have success. But you also have to credit the offensive line, and something that we talked about heading into last week was the fact that this is a cohesive unit now. There's no more musical chairs. Your thoughts on how the offensive line played against the Oakland Raiders?
I thought they did a solid job. They were not great. They did give up a few too many pressures to Eli. But I thought they were solid and certainly did enough to keep the chains moving with Andre Brown to grind out the first downs. And, you know, I think the thing that I want to stress here, Anita, and we've talked about this a lot, about having balance and how important a power running game is to the overall health of the offense. Did you know during the three-game winning streak, in each of those three games, the Giants have rushed the ball a minimum of 30 times? That's balance. Did you know that in each of those three wins, they've also held the ball longer than 30 minutes and won the time of possession? That is also very important. And you and I both know that has a domino effect on the entire team. Not only does it help the offensive line gain rhythm, not only does it help Eli Manning gain more confidence in terms of his play-action pass and keeping folks off balance and being able to mix things up like he wants, but the other thing that it does, it keeps the defense off the field in certain stretches and allows them a little time to catch their breath. And then when they get out there again, is it any wonder that part of all of this, there are so many factors as to why the defense is playing much, much better during this winning streak? One of them, subpar quarterbacks. One of them, because the offense has given them a chance to rest on the sidelines. One of them is because John Beeson is here. One of them is because Will Hill is here. One of them is because the pass rush is suddenly waking up a little bit. There are a multiple of reasons why this defense is playing better, and that's good.
Again, 201-939-4513, the phone number to get in on the show. And obviously, when you rush the ball and you're able to create that, defenses then have to play honest. Are you seeing, because of the way that the Giants have been able to run the ball, when they do run it effectively, less blitz packages, less of Eli Manning under duress?
It does look like to me that defenses are starting to be a little bit more respectful now of the Giants' run. Remember, it takes a few games to develop a trend to make teams respect what it is that you're trying to do. And I think we're starting to see that a little bit. It started in the Chicago game when Jacobs ran for 100 yards. That's where it started. So really, it's actually been now four games in a row where the Giants have been able to run the ball, pound the ball, maybe not put up huge pinball numbers in the running game, but do enough to make it effective. And yes, the answer to your question is, it does look like teams are starting to respect the run a lot more than they did in the first month of the season. I don't think there's any question about that. And by the way, we were talking about the Packers' offense being hurt. How about their defense that is crippled right now? Pinkett, their nose tackle, has a bad knee. Jolly, their right defensive end, has a bad groin. Nick Perry, their left outside linebacker, is playing on a bad foot. Ryan Matthews is playing with a broken right thumb, and he's got a club on it, and he was quoted last week as saying against the Eagles it was the worst game of his career. How about the fact that their secondary has given up 68% completions on bombs down the middle, 15 of 22 for an average of 20 yards a catch, and they only have three interceptions this season? This Packers team has taken on water on both sides of the ball. This could not be a better time to play them.
Again, 201-939-4513. Let's go to John calling in from Miami. John, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. You're on with Paul Dottino and Anita Marks.
Hi, folks. Just enjoying your show as always here at work, and I want to thank you for making things a lot smoother here in the morning.
We're trying.
Thank you. I just wanted to give props out. One name that Paul didn't mention, and the improvement of the defense is a shout-out to the Terminator. He is a beast. I enjoy watching him open up some holes and maul people over, so we can get our running game over. I think he's doing an excellent job.
Well, he had his best game as a Giant last weekend. If you got to look at the blocks he was throwing for Andre Brown, he clearly had an impact on that game, big time.
Yeah, he's just. I mean, I watched the game. I taped it and watched it a second time, and I saw some of the blocks that he makes. I mean, he's a powerful man, and don't want him going without a shout out to him. And also, I wanted to ask you if you think that there may be a switch on the kickoff returns. Maybe Cox can get in there. What do you think?
Well, you're asking the wrong guy, because I think Michael Cox should be returning kickoffs each and every week.
And
I'm quite frankly very disappointed that Tom Coughlin did not get him on the field the other day against the Raiders.
Exactly.
It made no sense. He was active. They didn't have a numbers game in the backfield. He had a uniform because Jacobs was down. And then they did not get him in the game to return kickoffs. And then Jernigan fumbles the opening kickoff. And somehow, Tom Coughlin puts him back out there for the next one. And I'm thinking to myself, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
Let's see. Maybe there'll be a change this coming Sunday. Anyway, thanks for everything, and you guys are doing a great job, and go Giants.
Thank you for your call, John. Appreciate it.
May I add to you, in terms of kickoff returns, Packers are giving up an average of 30 yards per kickoff return this year. They are one of the worst in the league. Horrible in kickoff coverage. Punt coverage much better, under 10 yards a return, but horrible in kickoff coverage. Now, of course, part of that is you got a lot of kickoffs that don't even get returned nowadays because the balls are going through the end zone or they're touchbacks. But when they do get returned, the Packers are not doing a very good job at containing people. Tom Coughlin the other day hinted that he hadn't decided what he was going to do with the kickoff return unit because somebody pressed him about Jernigan. And he said, we'll see. Could I get, please, 5 cents for every time Tom Coughlin says we'll see? Just 5 cents, please?
Talking about John Connor, this is a guy that I know you've been really high on, you've been really impressed with. We've been talking about the success of the running game, especially this past game. How often did you see John Connor out there in that I set with Andre Brown? What would you see the percentage of?
Oh, boy. You know what? I don't know that I even want to take a stab at that, Anita, because...
I'm just curious, the majority of the time, did they run
out
of...
Yeah.
One back set? Did they have back? Did they have pro? What?
Of Andre Brown's 30 carries, I would venture to say at least 85% of them had Connor in front of them.
Awesome. Again, 201-939-4513. Let's go to Steve in D.C. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Good morning.
Hey, you know, about the offensive line, so, you know, I think, you know, I really didn't have much, you know, a lot to say about the play or any particular play, I should say. You know, I think obviously, you know, everybody wants to say that they need to play better, and of course the whole team needs to play better. But I think really the biggest difference is, the success, or why, you know, I wouldn't call it success, well, we've been winning is really been the play calling. And I felt like we had the running backs to get it done. I mean, I don't really know why we don't play Cox, especially on kickoffs, but I think just having the balance, the threat of the run, is really what's made the biggest difference and what makes everybody look like they're playing better. You know, the confidence that, you know, the team doesn't know, you know, exactly what we're doing, because everybody knows we just seem so vanilla and so predictable. And I think now that we actually have balance, you know, and of course the defense gets a chance to rest, and just the whole nine yards, I think it's just pretty obvious it's the play calling. It's not the players. It's been the play calling. I wanted to see what you guys' opinion about that is, because I think that's been the biggest difference. It's the play calling. You know, we've always had good personnel. I mean, there's lots of things you could say. We always want to be better. You know, we love our Giants, but it's been the play calling. So I just wanted to, you know, get you guys' opinion on that. And, you know, great show. You know, also wanted to say this last thing, guys. You know, the only thing that really bothers me moving forward is, you know, the fact that we're playing these teams that, you know, have all these things going on, and, you know, we should beat them, you know, and I don't think our players are getting a false sense of confidence, but at the same time, they're not going to get the credit they deserve for winning these games. So I just want to know what your opinion is on how that affects us psychologically as a team, you know, because we're facing all these opponents that, you know, we should beat, you know, and how that's going to help or hurt us moving forward towards the more tougher opponents.
Steve, thanks
so
for your...
I'll listen off air. I'm sorry.
Thanks for your phone call. I appreciate it. You know, it's something that Paul and I discussed earlier on when we first started the show, and that is, look, we're not here to candy coat anything. I mean, the talk across the league is, all right, the Giants have won 3 games, but look at the situation in which they won them in. The fact that Josh Freeman was a deer in headlights, totally unprepared when he was quarterbacking for the Vikes. The fact that Michael Vick couldn't make it through the first quarter of that Philadelphia game, and Barkley had to come in. And then Terrell Pryor, this last game, was not 100%. His knee was a big issue, and so he didn't have that mobility that he's normally had throughout the season. And then now going up against this Green Bay Packers team, who Paul's really has broken it down and seen that it's not just their quarterback situation, the fact that Aaron Rodgers isn't quarterbacking, nor Seneca Wallace, but they've got a third-string quarterback. They'll be coming to New York, New Jersey, to take on the Giants. So things have bode well for them. And the point that I made when we started the show is, granted, yes, I think the Giants and I think the players, they're very well aware of the situation and who they faced. But I do believe that this is an opportunity for them to kind of maybe, let's say, work out the kinks. This is an opportunity for them to maybe try some new stuff, see what works, see what doesn't, because they have the ability and the room, the wiggle room, to maybe, you know, kind of get it together. And I do believe the past 3 games and then heading into this one, I think the Giants are doing that and kind of gearing up and getting ready, because they know what type of opponents they face after this Green Bay Packers team.
I'm going to twist a phrase around that we've heard a billion times, Anita. How many times do you hear an offensive coordinator or head coach say, we're going to take what the defense gives us? Well, in this case, the Giants are taking what the schedule maker has given them. Really?
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
Yeah, I do agree with you on that. Another thing, the caller was talking about the offense and how the offensive game plan has changed. You and I were hoping that it would change sooner than it did.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't think any offensive coordinator likes to hear that their offense is a dink and dunk offense. That's not a flattering thing to say, but because early on Eli was not getting the protection, he was still trying to do those, you know, those 5-7-step drops and trying to connect long and trying to run this offense that just could not operate with the offensive line and the people that were on the field. So maybe, you know, never too late, but yes, the offense has changed. It's more dink and dunk. It's more kind of relying on the yards after the catch, and it has bode well for them.
Well, that's actually twofold, Anita, because not only has that worked to the benefit of the offensive line, but because of now the continuity with Cordell, who has settled in, and David Deal, by the way, who, again, I have to say, he's been an upgrade over an injured Chris Snee at right guard. The Giants are able to run the ball again. You know, the caller was just saying, well, look at the play calls. They're able to run the ball and get more balance. Well, that's because maybe they actually have an offensive line that's blocking a little bit better for the run game. When they didn't have that, you couldn't call for it. You know, folks, sometimes you have to understand when you get on coaches for their play selection, sometimes, not always, Anita was just talking about breaking a philosophy and changing a philosophy a little bit to adapt. Sometimes there are things that you really want to do that you can't do because you don't have the tools to do it.
Again, 201-939-4513. Let's continue with our calls. We go to Andrew calling in from PA. Andrew, welcome.
Yeah, hi, Paul. Hi, Anita. I just had a couple things I wanted to talk about. First of all, I got to be honest, I don't really like hearing all the talk about how the Giants have gone up against, like, really subpar offenses, because, like, if you look at the first six games of the season, all the teams that beat us, like, we could say that about ourselves. We were only playing at subpar, but they still got wins. And all that really matters is winning the division, not how you go about doing it, you know? And
well, hold on a second. Hold on just 1 second. Nobody is saying that the Giants deserve an asterisk for any of these wins. The wins count as wins, and they have put themselves in position to get back into the race. That is an absolute 100% fact. The only thing Anita and I are trying to tell you is that if you think the way they played the last 3 weeks is good enough to be a playoff team, you're mistaken, because this road is going to get a bit rockier in the next month and a half, and they're going to have to continue to show improvement if they're going to get to where you want them to go. I think that's a very fair statement.
Yes, I completely agree with
that's
what
all
you're
we're telling
saying.
You. That's all we're telling you.
Yeah, but he's not upset with what we're saying. He said he's more frustrated that the national perception and talk about the Giants is, well, they've won three in a row, but look at the situation in which they've won those three games. But there is a percentage of truth to that. I mean, have the Giants been struggling in regard to injury and whatnot? Yes, but listen, the quarterback position, in my opinion, is the most important position in all of professional sports. You hear that phrase: in order to kill the snake, you need to cut off the head. And I'd go so far to say that 28 out of the 32 teams in the NFL, they lose their starting quarterback, their team is totally different. This Giants team loses Eli Manning, and granted, yes, he's thrown a ton of interceptions, a ton of pick for sixes. This is not his best year by a long shot. But whoever you have come in is not going to do any better. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I completely agree.
So,
yeah.
I mean, so that's not really fair to kind of compare that.
Yeah, also, I mean, I also just wanted to talk about how happy I was that Andre Brown had such a big game. I was a little nervous. I didn't want him to get too beat up. But I read this morning that Mathias Kiwanuka, I'm going to paraphrase, but Mathias Kiwanuka was saying that Eli Manning's held up for the defense for so many years. Now it's only fair that they should have to do the same for him. I just wanted to know what your thoughts were on that.
Well, I think it's very admirable, don't you? I mean, come on.
Oh,
what,
I agree. What,
you know, look at the long list of comeback victories. Two dozen fourth quarter and overtime wins that Eli Manning has pulled out of the can for this team over the last decade. And if it's time for the defense to reciprocate and give him some help, why shouldn't they?
Yeah, oh, I agree. I was glad to hear that they're standing behind him because he has done a lot for them. And earlier in the year, there was a lot of talk about what should be done with him, and I didn't agree with any of it. You know what I mean? He's just having an off year, and hopefully our running game and our defense can keep everything going for us.
Good stuff, man. Thanks.
Again, all right, thanks. 201-939-4513. Just to comment on that before we continue with our calls, and we do appreciate the calls. Also, hit us up on email, all things social media. Make sure you include that hashtag GiantsChat. And Paul's monitoring Twitter. I'm sure that there's some comments on Twitter, Paul, that we can get to a little bit later on in the show. But that has been really what's been transpiring here this season, and especially since the players went in and met with Perry Fuel and kind of changed some things, simplified this defense and in the schemes. The defense has stepped up to the table. The defense is the reason why the Giants are winning these games. Eli hasn't had one comeback kid performance yet this season. He hasn't had to because in the games that they've won, because the Giants defense has been performing so well.
Yeah, it's truly amazing. If you were to say to me before the year that we would be heading into a November 17th game and not having seen one of Eli's specials, I would have said, come on. He probably would have had at least two by now. It hasn't happened. One of the reasons is because, you know, they've had so many problems, not just on offense, but also on special teams, which has really, really thrown some cold water in their faces on a number of occasions this year. The only real comeback I think that Eli had a chance to maybe pull out late in the game might have been the first game against Dallas. He was really in position to do something there. And the Chicago game, too. I'm sorry. Let me take that one back. The Chicago game, too. And then Brandon Myers was unable to corral that pass there at the end. So, yeah, I guess you could say he's 0 for 2 so far in those kinds of situations, which is surprising, I mean, given his record.
Again, 201-939-4513, the phone number to get in. We continue with Ed in Maryland. Ed, welcome.
Good morning, guys. I just wanted to touch base on the thinking that Eli Manning is just having a down year. Because I recall this saying that he had a down year last year. And I just wanted you, Paul, to see if you could pull us a stat. That's a bad stat, but I just want to see if you could dig it up.
What do you got?
How many pick sixes has Eli thrown in his career? And how many pick sixes has he thrown at home in his career? Because, I mean, I've been watching Giants games for years and years. I've been watching NFL games for years and years. I've never seen a quarterback throw as many pick sixes as Eli. He has an 81 career quarterback rating. And so I just want people to just get the final understanding that Eli Manning is not just having a down year. He's on his way towards having his third 20-pick season. So if this is his third 20-pick season, this is not his first down year. And so being that he's not putting up good stats, he's throwing picks left and right, something has to be looked at in the offseason. If it's his quarterback's coach, who was formerly the wide receivers coach, Sean Ryan, and Sean Ryan, before he was wide receivers coach, he was something else. And instead of costing, bringing somebody from outside the organization, he likes to bring guys up. And I'm not saying Sean Ryan is a bad coach, but maybe he's just not the right guy to fix Eli. And, those things have to be looked at. But, you know, Giants fans like to blame the O-line or the play calling. Look at the other quarterbacks. Peyton Manning turned the offensive line from average players into Pro Bowl type guys. Aaron Rodgers was probably the most sacked quarterback over the past three seasons. He's putting up numbers. So I don't like to hear people saying that it's just the offensive line or he's dealing with pressure or this is his first down year. It's all Eli's fault. I mean, if he feels pressure and he just wants to throw the ball and just close his eyes and throw the ball, I mean, who else is to blame? Besides him, either he has to take the sack or throw the ball away. But you know, I just get tired of people saying, "Oh, this is just his down year. The offensive line's fault." It's his fault. I mean, I was just seeing some stats, and out of all the 32 quarterbacks started since 2005, he has the worst quarterback rating. I mean, 81 is barely 79. So, you know, this is not his first down year. So if you could please just put up that stat whenever you can, because I don't want us to sugarcoat anything.
I'll try to find it for you so I can give it to you tomorrow's show, okay? Is that fair enough? I don't have that offhand.
Yeah, that's...
So listen in tomorrow, and I will tell you this, and we'll let you go, and I want to comment on this. I think this has been Eli's worst season since he was a rookie here, okay? I think there are a lot of factors that go into him having a subpar year for him. But I will also add this, Anita. The one thing that the caller did mention, and it may or may not be a coincidence, Eli Manning's best season were when Chris Palmer was his quarterback's coach. I have a tremendous amount of respect, as everybody does around the NFL, for Chris Palmer, who was an NFL quarterback's
guru. Not everybody.
Guru. Most people do.
Not everybody.
And I would...
I mean, apparently his time in Tennessee was not good, Paul.
There were some issues there that I can't really talk about because I'm really not there, and I don't want to go on hearsay. But...
Well, he's not there anymore.
No, but I think his track record, though,
speaks
for itself.
And we've seen Jake Locker get better since he was not there.
That is true.
So, but Chris's
resume, though, over the years, is certainly proven worthy of high praise, I think, by most people. And so, is that a coincidence that Eli's best seasons were with Chris here? Maybe, maybe not. But I think it's certainly something you can look at. Let's put it that way. And Chris, by the way, right now is watching football and hoping to get back into coaching again.
What do you think? I know you broke down. Actually, you spent some time and you broke down all of Eli Manning's interceptions. What is wrong with Eli this year? Besides the obvious. I mean, the obvious is the offensive line has been one of the worst in the NFL. He's gotten no pressure. I've said this a million times before. As great as the Manning family, the boys, obviously I'm not talking about Archie. Archie was extremely athletic, if you look at his game film. But Peyton and Eli, they're not really athletic guys. They don't really, you know, they don't run 4-3s, and they really don't scramble much. Both of them need solid offensive lines. They like to stay in the pocket. They've got great pocket awareness, cerebral. They're the two smartest quarterbacks in the NFL. They've got great arms, great accuracy. I mean, there's obviously a lot of positives that make them two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, but athleticism is not one of them. So knowing that, look, we're seeing what's going on with Peyton Manning. I mean, there was talk that, you know, he had an MRI this week. There's talks that maybe he's not going to play Sunday against the Kansas City Chiefs. Obviously, that's not going to happen. This is probably one of the biggest games of Week 11. But nonetheless... besides the offensive line, what is wrong with Eli this year?
Look, Eli is one of those quarterbacks who, unfortunately, when things start to go bad around him, he does start to develop bad habits, and it does fuss with his mechanics. He is a very cerebral quarterback. He thinks so much. He is so much in tune to not only what he's doing, but what everybody else on the offense is doing. He's like a computer back there in terms of his mental capabilities. But where he does slip up are in his mechanics. He does not always stay true to his mechanics. And more often than not, his mechanics get screwed up when he starts to face heat. And really, to me, that's the primary wart, if you will, on his resume. He doesn't stay true to his mechanics. He does tend to get thrown awry. And in my mind, that's the number one thing that a quarterback's coach should be dealing with when dealing with an Eli Manning. It's not so much the playbook. It's not so much the philosophy. It's not so much going through the execution of the progressions. It's about his mechanics in the pocket. He needs a guy, you know, like the Midas muffler man, kind of takes care of the muffler for you when it starts getting a little loud. Eli Manning needs a guy to take care of his muffler.
201-939-4513. As I said, let's go to Zeke. Zeke calling in from Virginia. Zeke, welcome.
Hey, how y'all doing, Anita?
All right.
John, how y'all doing this morning?
Don't you ever call me John again, or I'll be forced to kill you.
Oh, snap.
That's all right. Go ahead.
Paul, I'm sorry. How you doing?
I'm all right.
I just like to touch on what y'all were talking about with Eli. Paul, was Palmer the quarterback coach in 2011?
Chris left right before that season. He was here for the first Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And then Mike Sullivan took over.
Yeah, I would like to say that Eli, I never seen Eli play any better than in 2011. So I really can't point to...
You think so? You really think that was his best season?
I mean, by far. I mean, he was a four-quarter guru. I mean, he was throwing pills out there in the fourth quarter. I mean, our defense was playing horrible. Miami Dolphins, Carolina Panthers, with their backup quarterbacks going off on us, Vince Young. I mean, Eli carried us to that Super Bowl.
I thought that not only was the 2007 Super Bowl season very impressive, but then I thought a couple of years later in 2009, I thought he was absolutely taking it to that next level. You know, when people started saying, well, is he a lead or not? I thought that was the season where he really, really proved to be a top five quarterback. But you know what? He's had some great seasons, so we're kind of splitting hairs here. I don't want to waste time on that.
I mean, there's no doubt about it, but I mean, Eli is by far having his worst season I ever seen. Like you said, since his rookie season.
No doubt.
I mean,
no doubt.
But there's a lot of things that, you know, come with that. You know, the offensive line, the tight end's not really helping us out much because he has to stay in the block. The running backs, I mean, we're down to our sixth-string running back we just picked off the street, you know what I mean? That's not helping us out. But two things I'd like to point on, a former first-round pick and our first-round pick last year. I think Justin Pugh's having a very great season this year. I think he's probably one of our best offensive linemen just this season. I think he's outplaying everybody else, which tells you how bad all his line can be at times. And also, Hakeem Nix. I love Hakeem Nix, man. He's an absolute beast when he's on, but for the most part, he's been off, and I haven't seen the double coverage like I usually saw in the past, like 2010 and 2011. He was getting double covered almost every play. I'm not sure if he's getting double covered every play now, and he's not beating the single covers like he used to. So I'll just take y'all comments off there.
Well, Anita, why don't I let you take Nix and I'll take Pugh? I think that Justin Pugh, for a rookie, has done a very good job. I'd probably give him a strong B, maybe a B+, for coming in and doing what he's doing. But again, the Giants thought they had a chance to compete for that job when they drafted him. That's why he was picked, and he's proven them right. You know, he still needs to mature physically to get stronger so that he's got more punch and more physicality off the line, but that's going to come in time. Remember, he's still only a rookie now. And then, obviously, he's still got stuff to learn. But you have to be very pleased with what he's done so far. And as far as Nix, Anita, both of us are very disappointed in his season so far, too.
Well, I'm sure. Hey, listen, this is a contract year. You and I are disappointed. Fans are disappointed. Fantasy football fans are disappointed. You don't think he's disappointed? Do you know how much money? I mean, this is a contract year where Hakeem Nix very well could demand 12. If Mike Wallace got $12 million to go play for the Miami Dolphins, are you kidding me? I mean, this is a really big year for Hakeem Nix. So, I mean, as frustrated and as disappointed as I think a number of people are, don't think for a second he isn't 10 times as disappointed. Now, has it all been his fault? I don't think so, Paul. I mean, you know, there's times where, yes, we're not seeing that speed, we're not seeing that burst, he's not getting separation. Like, I get that. But at the same time, you know, there's been moments where he has gotten the separation, he has been wide open, and Eli Manning's getting sacked, rushed, hurried, throwing interceptions, not on the same page. So I don't think it's all about Hakeem Nix. I think it's half Hakeem Nix, and I think it's half the fact that this offense has struggled in a big way this season.
No question about it. And you know what? I want to throw one other thing in there about Eli before I let this caller's topic go. For all of the issues that he's had this year, and we talked about this the other day, Anita, the touchdown pass to Randall on Sunday against Oakland could not have been finer. I honestly don't know if more than five or six quarterbacks in the league could have made that throw into the right corner of the end zone for the touchdown. Randall, by the way, did a great job of maintaining his concentration. He was interfered with by Jenkins. There's no question about that. And no flag was thrown. And the Giants were able to come up with a very critical touchdown in a big spot. Those are the kinds of things that Eli Manning does sometimes that we take for granted because he's done it so many times before. There's not a throw he can't make at any time from any place on the field. And I think sometimes, you know, we need to remind ourselves of that.
Again, 201-939-4513. With you for the next 15 minutes till 10:30. And then head coach Tom Coughlin, we've got to get ready for his press conference. He addresses the media at 11 a.m. Eastern time today. Let's go to Chris in New Jersey.
Hi, good morning, Paul. Good morning, Anita.
Hi.
Hi. Just a question and a comment. The past two games before the Raider game, it looked like the Giants were passing a little bit more to the backs. And I expected that the same, you know, against the Raiders this past weekend. Was that it didn't really happen? Was that more of a reason because Hillis made that fumble and then he was kind of out of the loop there the rest of the game, and they kind of went away from that? Because I really expected some throws to the backs.
Well, part of the situation on Sunday is that the wind really played havoc with the game. Steve Weatherford said it was the worst he'd ever experienced. Jeff Fiegels, one of our broadcast partners, said he had never seen the wind on the field as tricky as it was Sunday in the years since the new stadium had been built. And so in two of the quarters, you know you're going against the wind. And then the other problem was, even at some points during the game, even when you were going with the wind, I believe it was the south end zone, it started crosswinding. And that's
right.
A problem.
Yeah,
so,
I saw that with the post.
Yeah, so basically it came down to, as Tom Coughlin even admitted Monday during his media briefing, it came down to, given the conditions and the way things were going, you really wanted to keep the ball on the ground as much as possible if you could. And that also, you know, fed into Andre Brown getting a lot more carries than they wanted to.
Right, right. And one more question. This is minor, but one thing that kind of stuck in my mind from that game was at the end of the first half, after the pick six, I guess, it was a minute left, around a minute, and the Giants got the ball back. Eli was able to get a first down, but before the first down, the Giants called timeout, which I said, all right, they're going to try and maybe go down the field. As soon as they got the first down, they just let the clock run out to the half, which I didn't understand. Why call timeout, you know, if you didn't get the first? And when you did get the first, you just let it run out.
Yeah.
Any
idea? That's a great question, Chris. Thank you for your phone call. I saw a lot of, I'm hosting an NBC Sports Radio show.
Superstar.
Well, no, that's not. I'm just explaining.
No, I know you are.
During when the Giants, my show's on NBC Sports Radio from noon to 3 on Sundays. So when the Giants play at 1 o'clock, I'm hosting my radio show, and at the same time, I'm trying to keep an eye on the action, and I'm following Twitter. And I saw on Twitter the Giants really got ripped for that. What exactly went down there, Paul? Why didn't they use better clock management and at least try to put 3 points up on the board before the half?
Well, we're talking 1:18 to go in the first half, first down from the 20. Eli sacked for a loss of 4. They called time. And I think at that point they finally decided to themselves, okay, you know what? Maybe we're not going to do anything with this. We just got hit for a loss on the first play. Maybe we're just going to decide to sit on it. And I think that's what happened. I think they took that time out to decide to sit on the ball as opposed to when they came out for the initial offensive possession. I think they were of the mindset that they were going to try to get some points. Because on the second down play, Peyton Hillis, a 12-yard run, followed by Peyton Hillis again for 3, Peyton Hillis for 4, and the clock expires. So what you saw were 3 straight running plays after the timeout. So that's my answer to you. I don't know. I have not talked to the coaches about it, but I didn't think anything was so weird about it. I thought what happened was they came out thinking they're going to get points, got sacked on first down, called timeout and said, all right, guys, take a deep breath. Ah, the hell with it. Let's just go into the locker room and forget about it. That's what I think happened.
All right. Let's continue with our calls. I know we've got a full bank, and I want to try to get everybody on before we have to sign off. Let's go to Lynn in Columbia. Lynn, welcome. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, guys. How are you this morning?
Hi.
Here's the good news for me in listening to the show. Nobody wants to release Eli today. No one wants Painter to be the quarterback. So even the people who are being critical, in the body of work, Paul, they still don't want to fire the guy. I have trouble talking about Eli coherently because I'm biased toward him. I mean, I really like the guy, and he's one of my favorites. I just want to get that out front. But I think the good news today is nobody wants Painter to play on Sunday. And you know, on those kneel downs at the end of the half on Sunday, I mean, we want this guy to throw the ball away. We want this guy to take sacks. But you know, when discretion is the better part of valor, and he takes the kneel down, all of a sudden we get critical. We want him to be throwing the ball. I don't understand it. But one thing, I sit in that end of the stadium, the south end of the stadium, Paul, and I'm in the lower deck. I turned to the guy when he threw that pass to Randall. I turned to my good friend sitting next to me, and I said, "That was just an unbelievable throw."
Sure was.
I mean, you really hit on a good one there, Paul. You know what he said back to me? He said, "That's why the guy makes $20 million a year." It was a great throw. It was a great throw. One play at a time. Yeah, go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry.
Honestly, I'm glad you could at least give some perspective of the wind that was down there, because you were down there.
Oh, my gosh.
I was up in the box until the middle of the fourth quarter. So you could tell people exactly how nasty that was.
I'm telling you. I'm in the lower deck down in that end of the stadium, Paul, and really in the, I guess, over toward the corner where Randall caught that ball.
Right.
And I've been hanging out in the Meadowlands, 37, 38, well, right from the beginning. What is it, 38 years since Shine Stadium?
Oh, 77. 76.
That's 76. So it's about 37, 38 years. That's about as bad as I've ever seen that wind. Now, it wasn't cold. And when he threw that screen pass to Cruz, remember the screen pass to Cruz where Victor was maybe 10 yards away from him?
Yeah.
That was almost in line with me. I swear to God, Paul, the ball shot up in the air and shot toward the other end zone. I mean, the wind just blew it up.
You know what, Len? I'm just going to add one comment to what you just said. Wouldn't it be a shame if that wind came back and kind of harassed the Packers and their new quarterback on Sunday?
Yeah, the problem is you get that wind in 1 o'clock games, and you get the 4:25, Paul.
Yeah, I know.
That
poor kid will be crying home to his mother if it happens. Though, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Listen, one play at a time. If we don't win that play, start over again and win the next play, and you keep playing the best players you got on the 53. Ask them to play as hard as they can right up to 4 o'clock on December 29th. Check the scoreboard and see where we are.
Thanks,
Len.
Thanks
for taking the call. Bye.
201-939-4513. As I said, going to try to get through these calls. Let's go to Kevin in Chicago. Kevin, welcome.
Good morning, Anita. Good morning, Paul.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that anytime I see a victory formation, I'm pretty happy. I mean, I'm pretty rough on my Giants, but, hey, when I see that victory formation, it makes me a happy person. The thing I want to talk about, because I know we're trying to press for time, is that I know a lot of people kind of harp on the predictability of the offense and all that, but the way I see it is that it comes down to execution, because all the coaches can do is draw up a play, say, here's the play, this is what we want you to run, and the guys got to go out there and they got to run the play. And it seems a lot of times that, at least early in the season, maybe it was because of the losses, there just wasn't a lot of heart or energy behind it. And that said, I'm really glad that we have Andre Brown back. And even going back to Jacobs, it seems that you get a certain sort of a persona or attitude on that sideline, and it's like all of a sudden the guys kind of buy into it, and you just kind of see that sort of translate on the field. So I'm hoping Andre Brown, God willing, stays healthy, and I'm hoping that we see this sort of, hopefully swagger, this belief kind of grow. And I'm also wondering what your opinions are going forward. Do you think that Reese is going to start taking the draft when it comes to O-line and linebackers a little bit more serious? Because I'm hoping that Pugh is the beginning of a trend. I'm hoping that Pugh is going to be the beginning of them saying, okay, let's start looking at the near future, the future, and actually having a strong O-line in front of whatever quarterback's there. Because in this league, I don't care who your quarterback is, if you don't have an O-line, he better know how to run. And so on that note, I'll hang up and I'll listen to you guys on the radio. And thank you for your time. Long-time listener, first-time caller. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you for dialing in. Anita, I don't think there's any question that the Giants finally got to the point of desperation when they took Pugh in the first round this year. And I would think that they realize, especially after the success that Pugh has had, they've got to take a better care of that O-line going forward. They have to.
Yeah, but wait, this Pugh is the first-round draft pick offensive lineman since...
William Roberts, I believe.
Which was back in...
1983, I think.
Exactly. Let's continue. Let's go to Charlie calling in from Portland. Charlie.
84, I think. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. I didn't get a chance to watch the game on Sunday. I had to work, but a few couple questions. Did Lewis Murphy play at all?
Lewis Murphy?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, did he take any snaps in the game? That's a good question. Let me take a quick glance here for you. I do know that I was talking to some of the coaches about him, and they were saying to me that they would like to try to get him involved more during the second half of the season. He did get into the game. How much, I'm not sure. Let me see if I have this here.
Hosley, did he play, or was he...
Hosley was scratched. Hosley's coming off a hammy. He was scratched.
All right. That's another wasted spot. How about Robinson? Did he actually play this week?
I don't really want to talk about Adrian Robinson. Because even when he plays, there's not a lot there to say.
Really? Did he play, though? Was he inactive?
Did he get in the game? I think he was inactive. No, you know what? Hold on.
Oh, my
God.
You're
going to make me look this up. I'll look it up. There are some guys I tend not to even think about. He was not active.
Oh, great. Why are they keeping these people on the roster then? Why don't they just put them on IR? And, you know, it just seems like a wasted spot to me, these guys. But Lewis Murphy, can he return kicks?
No.
Has he ever returned kickoffs?
No. Don't even think about it. Doesn't have the skill set to do it.
All right. How about people on the practice squad like the wide receivers?
How about just having Michael Cox return kickoffs? How do you think he made this team? He averaged 30 yards per kickoff return of the preseason. That's how he made the team.
Why? You know, I don't get it. Why don't they do these things? I mean, to me, that comes down to that old school head frame that Coughlin has. I love Coughlin. He's a great coach. But in those type of situations, I don't know. He's just got this block about rookies, and it's just he won't use them, and it's just like, you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, Jurgensen should have been off the roster a long time ago. I'm sorry, but you know, he hasn't shown himself as a wide receiver, and now that was one time. You know, he fumbled. It wasn't like he's done it every week, but it just seems like a waste to me. And
all right.
All right. So anyway, that's all I had to say. I see so many roster spots, and to me, they could have hung on to Rodgers, given him 2 or 3 weeks to heal up.
I know, but they were worried about a chronic knee thing for him down the stretch, and they didn't want to deal with his availability. Plus, they needed a spot for Marcus Kuhn.
Yeah, but
that's
didn't
a tough
need
one.
A spot.
Well,
I'm with you.
I'm with you. I think they could have found someone else to trim, but that's where they went. Thanks for the call. Anita, we had a couple of Giants chat items on the web I did want to get to. NFLNYG43 says the other team punted into the wind, too. He did fine. Why the excuses? Weatherford told me he had trouble with the drop on his punts. And the wind was playing a lot of tricks and a lot of havoc with him on his drop, and that's why he did not punt very well the other day. The Raiders punter, by the way, is an outstanding, I think King is his name, an outstanding punter, and he was able to deal with it a lot better than Weatherford was. They have a lot of wind in Oakland, I understand, believe it or not. In that stadium, I'm told they play with some very tricky stuff during the course of the season. We have Kispe 007 says the offense has a lot of work to do. Eli is still a great quarterback. I think he's been getting better week to week. NYG Cap Central says Texans are signing safety. Jawan's a starling off the Giants practice squad, so they'll have a vacancy there. And then finally, Carly Martinez at the C-Note says Giants in a no-win position with these games versus poor opponents. Either they don't blow them out or the quarterback they faced was bad. And that about wraps things up.
Really quick, I just got this. You need to make a G-Men comeback on your weekly picks. Lance and Schmelk are killing you. I haven't made picks. So how are they killing me online if I haven't made picks?
I don't know.
Okay. And we do not have time for any more callers. We thank you so much for your participation. We will be back tomorrow, same time, 9:30 a.m. Eastern time, right here on Giants.com. Phone lines will be open. Little programming note, later on today, around 4 p.m. Eastern time, Justin Pugh will join me for Big Blue Hits Live. You can tune in and watch that on Giants.com, and the phone lines will be open. So if you've got a question for Justin Pugh, you want to call into the show, set your alarm, make sure you watch, and please be a part of the show. Tomorrow, Eric Kennedy, owner of Big Blue Interactive, will join us as well. So still a lot more coming your way this week right here on Giants.com. Have a great day, everybody.